Now we've gone to a recorded format. We're being recorded. And so be sure and speak up when you speak. And we will no longer then be approving minutes at the beginning of these meetings because we're just having audio records now. So with that, we can move to community input. And as I understand it, Annie isn't here and Kristen's going to fill us in.
Yeah. So just wanted to give a little bit of information about the Clark County Transition Fair that is happening on April 26th, and I'll pass this information out for you guys. They are looking to solicit vendors as well as participants. So this is, I think, their third annual on this, and it's a great event. So if you know of anybody, spread the word and get people to come. And I don't know, is there anything else that you want to know about?
There are several hundred people that come today. I think 300 plus. So
it's from Saturday, April 26th, and it's from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and it's up at Prairie High School in Vancouver.
I know their speakers and their topics have been really comprehensive. One year I was there for the Autism Society of Washington, sort of staffing a table, and when I looked down at all the lists of the programs, I was sad that I was there staffing the table and not going to the programs because they looked really, really good. They get great speakers for that event. I want to say, too, that they have a Facebook page.
I think they do. Yeah, it's on the bottom of the handout.
Website. Like it and get updates. And it's just, it's a really good resource. It's a really good event.
And it's free.
So we'll move on to special orders. And we have Jim Maines here to talk about the freeholders.
Want me to set up here?
That'd be great.
Alrighty, well thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here. And I'll just kind of piece through this and feel free, I'll answer any questions that you guys have at the end. And I usually give this little spiel to elementary school kids, so if you want me to keep it at that level, I can. So I don't know how much detail you'd like about me, but my name is Jim Maines, and I am a partner in a local company called High Five Media. I also have my own consulting firm. Our focus is on politics, local politics, and running campaigns and collecting data for organizations, nonprofits, and businesses. And I'm also the executive assistant to Ed Lynch, who's kind of a local community leader. And I'm on various boards in the community, CBAT, which is actually downstairs here, and Leadership Clark County and the Vancouver Farmers Market. So just try to be engaged as much as possible. And I don't always share this, but I'm also part of a video blog with Gary Bach called VancouverSide.com. And right now we have a video blog out there on addiction in our county. And our focus is on how addiction is facing individuals, families, and then the community at large. If you want to check that out, it's VancouverSide.com.
Side.
So it's like this side of the river. Okay. So VancouverSide.com. So I'm here to talk about freeholders. So just to start off, what is a freeholder? Well, first of all, I was elected a freeholder back in November and ran just like, you know, any normal person would run for an office. And I represent District 3, Seat 5, so this district here, mostly the 49th area. A freeholder is a temporary, nonpartisan elected position. Those elected will draft a new county charter. So we'll review the current, well really there is no charter, we're not a charter county, but we will basically draft a charter, or many people call it create a new government for the county. Freeholder elections are rare. In the last 50 years, I was told there's only been a handful. In the last 30, there's been two, I believe. And the charter that went before the voters, neither of them didn't pass. And so we're hoping that we'll get one passed this time around. So right now, the freeholders, our goal is we have until July. this July to basically craft the charter. And then that charter will go before the voters for approval next November. Technically, we have until December, but the goal of the freeholders and our chair, we really would like to get it on the ballot when the most people are going to be voting, and that'll be in November. And it also will cost more money to have a special election, say, like next February. So the goal is, I mean, so it is a tight schedule. Other freeholders, like in the past, have up to 3 years to craft a charter. We're looking at, like, you know, 6 to 8 months. So it's been a while of running. So I kind of go into why I ran for freeholder. So if you're interested, I can share that, or we can come back to that. But to talk a little bit about a charter, so some of the things that we're looking at changing are the things that we really, really we can come up with anything as long as it's legal and as long as it follows the state's constitution. But the areas that we really felt like we needed to focus on and the feedback we received from the community at large, one was focusing on initiative and referendums for the community, or for the county. Because right now, certain cities in the county have that, but the county as a whole does not have that. And if you'd like me to, I could go into more detail on that. Establish a legislative body with 5 or more commissioners. And right now, we currently have 3 commissioners. And so one of the areas that we hear the feedback, it really just takes 2 commissioners to basically make it, you know, to make something stick and put it into policy and law. You guys probably know that. I know we're being recorded. So what we're looking at doing is bumping that up. We could have bumped it up to 7 to 9, even 15. We've looked at those numbers, but 5 is the number we kind of landed on, but I'll get into that in a minute. So that was an area that we could focus on. Also, make the commissioner strictly legislative and have a county administrator or a county executive, which would take over all of the operations and the day-to-day. So basically splitting up the body. So the commissioners would focus on policy, legislative piece, and a new county administrator or an executive. An executive means it would be hired, or hired by the voters, and a county administrator would be hired by the commissioners. So that's another piece we have to look at and focus on. And we could look at the charter to have fixed term limits. We could change it from partisan to nonpartisan, and also requiring the county government to have a binding code of ethics. So those, basically, when we were elected, we filled out a survey, and this was pretty much the 5 areas that the freeholders landed on that we really want to focus on when crafting this new charter. So to kind of give you the update, where we're at today, we have approved, well, actually, our recommendation will be 5 commissioners. We're going to split the county into 5 districts. And I actually brought a map with me to pass around just to show you. The GIS just shared this with us yesterday, so we can take a look. So this would be the 5 commissioner districts, and each district would vote in the primary for their commissioner, similar to what we have now. And then in the general election, it would be countywide vote. And that's been kind of an interesting piece that the commissioners have been not really divided, but there's been a good voice of commissioners, I'd say 5 of them, that have been really looking to make it district-wide for the primary and for the general, instead of making it countywide. And sometimes politics, you know, gets in the play, where they might feel like they, maybe if they're a Republican or a Democrat, they'll feel like they might have an advantage one way or the other. So that's one area that we're going to recommend. We also are splitting the power, so the commissioners will have legislative power, the 5 commissioners, yes.
It looks like 4.
Yeah, it's really hard to see this one.
Where is it?
Let's see this line here. So it's 2 different colors.
Oh, so the city, sort of pinky.
So it's almost like Vancouver is split into 3 districts.
Okay.
So looking at power, the commissioners would have legislative power, and then the freeholders are recommending a county administrator. So that means the 5 commissioners, well, the only power they're really going to have besides setting policy will be to hire or fire the county administrator. Now, the freeholders struggled with this, and I think it was 2 or 3 meetings. They really wanted a firewall there. You know, one, who are they going to be able to hire? What kind of, credentials will this person have? And at the same time, what's going to stop the commissioners, or the other way around, from getting involved in the day-to-day operations? So we've created a firewall that for the hire or fire, and this will be in the charter, it will be a supermajority vote of the commissioners. So that means four of the five will have to vote to hire this county manager and fire this county manager. We also put in a piece into the charter where if the commissioners get into day-to-day operations with staff by going under, or going over, I guess you'd say, the county administrator or the county manager, it will be considered malfeasance, which means they could be recalled. And that's actually right there, black and white, into the charter. And the reason, again, for that is to protect the county and really to protect the commissioners, to keep that distance, because it's just like, you know, we're going to separate our government somewhere that we got Olivia, and they have their role. We have our city council members, and they have their role. So in the same way, by splitting the county, you're going to have the commissioners, what their role is, and then the new hire county manager, what their role is.
So would the new commissioners be more similar to the structure that the city councils are,
exactly,
where they're minimally paid, and they're really more part-time than full-time?
Actually, that is the topic on Saturday. So it's interesting on this one, because people will tell you, like even city council members that I work with, they'll tell you this is a full-time job. You know, you'll hear our mayor, and they'll say that all the time. This is full-time. And it's, from what I'm hearing, it will be very difficult for the charter to specify that this is a part-time position. But what we can do is say, we can't really do this, but they'll have to create this within the budget. So are they going to be paying five commissioners $120,000 a year? It sounds like it'd be like seven. So then they can decide, you know, whoever's running for that position, if their life fits and their lifestyle fits, then they can take it on. I think we're just not going to be like, you know, say, you know, 20 hours a week to work. And, you know, we really can't control that. So,
are you going to have time for questions later on, Jay?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Okay. So the other piece right now that we're in the middle of, too, that we're going to be focusing on this weekend is partisan and nonpartisan. Right now the commissioners are leaning, I believe it's like, at least at the last meeting, it was 9-4, that they want to keep it partisan. And I was one that was on the opposite end of that, wanting to push for nonpartisan. In the information that I collected just through my work, it's interesting, there's a divide, a line around 50 years and over that really they're passionate about keeping it partisan. I think it's just, you know, they may have been involved in politics, they see this, either you're Republican or Democrat, and this is what, you know, we're going to vote Republican or Democrat. You can ask Mark Bolt about that. He had a lived that on, you know, losing out on a lot of votes just because people saw a letter behind his name. And so there's this younger vibe that we've been picking up with the younger generation and people, I'd say, under 45, where, I mean, it's like there's not even a thought process, nonpartisan. And I mean, I know a lot of people that I work with that won't even vote Republican or Democrat because they feel like if they vote someone that's a Republican or Democrat, then all of a sudden they're married to the party. So it's been an interesting discussion, but where we're landing, where the freeholders are landing, and going to recommend, I believe, is to keep it partisan. And they believe that it keeps it a little bit easier, and also we've got to sell this to the community. And that's something you always have to remember in the back of your mind. This has to go before the voters. So in order for this charter to pass, we can't change everything, you know, one time.
Are you talking about the executive, this administrator being partisan?
No, this would be just the five.
Yeah, because, well then, but they're going to elect they're going to appoint a nonpartisan.
Hopefully it won't be family. Oh, actually, I heard the family member piece. They actually had a freeholder that was pushing for they can't be family or friends. Well, that's a hard equipment, you know, for friends.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Does this happen elsewhere in America? You have an unelected official as a hot official?
Yeah, actually, in the city of Vancouver, for example, Eric Holmes is the city administrator. So he runs all the city, all the day-to-day, all the operations. The city council, they hire and fire him. that's the only person that they basically manage. And then Eric's in charge of the entire.
It's called a weak mayor system.
So it's not really an executive. He's just the manager.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the executive term would be used. So it's a county manager in this term. But if we had a county executive, then they would be aligned.
That would be like the president.
Yeah. Exactly. And so we went back and forth on.
Sorry, Jim, since you're on this subject specifically, yeah. I'll ask my question now.
No problem.
Why did you guys go down the administrator versus executive path then?
That was a tough one. I would say a group of freeholders really believe that when you look at the county as a whole, that people would have a hard time swallowing that someone could be elected based on popularity and not qualifications. And, you know, someone that just might have a lot of money or a network or connections could just run. And, you know, I know just coming from the political world that a lot of signs and name recognition is elected. And I think I know it was a lot of deliberation, we realized that having safeguards, one, like a supermajority, that they have to look at qualifications over popularity. And like when we look at someone like Bill Barrett, he would never run for that position. But he was, you know, great at running the county. And so we really felt like that kind of a person, they're just not going to want to run a campaign. And another argument people had, then you're going to have someone for 3 years focused on the county, and then for 1 year, out campaigning and trying to win over votes, and they're not going to be focused on the county, they're going to be focused on popularity and polls and that kind of stuff. One thing, and it's a great question because it's something I said and then I had to really hold myself to this. At the very first meeting, I tried to remind the freeholders that we're not here for today. We're not here because of what could be happening right now in the county. We have to look at crafting a charter for the future, for 20 years from now, when these current, you know, commissioners are no longer here. And it's really hard to not, I mean, especially the emails I receive when I'm out in the community, even when I was visiting an elementary school, people really know what's going on in the county. And everybody has their 2 cents and they're concerned. But I have to remind myself that, and the other freeholders, that we have to look out for the good of the future. And that's why it's important, too, to remember, just from a party perspective, a lot of times you'll have maybe the Republican side crafting it so that they can maybe get their votes, and you have the Democrat side doing the same thing. And granted, we're nonpartisan. I mean, we ran as nonpartisan seats. So it's interesting that the party still infiltrates on every level. So I hope that kind of explained why we decided to go that way.
Yeah, thank you.
But overall, it's because of the vote. I mean, we really have to, you can't make so many changes that people are going to be like, I can't even understand this. You know. So, and one last piece. We're going to have just one item on the ballot for approval. The past charters, there were numerous up and down vote, you know, where they would have, you basically have to approve one, to approve the second one, to approve the third one, and then the charter pass.
Yay.
So we're removing that. So basically it's going to be, do you approve the charter or do you approve, you know, up or down?
Yeah.
And that's it. So again, we need to start to educate the community on the importance of what's in the charter, but we also have to keep it simple so that it's not overwhelming. I really appreciate the question, but even just trying to explain it, you know, and how you articulate it in a way so that the average voter will understand kind of what we're trying to accomplish.
You said the last two didn't pass. Is that when you determined why? Because it was too complicated?
It was 2%. I mean, it was very close to the last one. And that, the reason why, and that's what kind of makes me personally nervous, is it involved the districts. And I don't know the verbiage. I can't tell you the verbiage. But it was along the lines of the county outside of the city and outside of kind of the urban areas really want their districts to vote for their commissioner. Not only in the primary, but in the general. And I believe it had something to do with that. That's why I went.
Both times, huh?
I don't think they understood it. I don't think for years people just see it as more expense in commissioners, why are we doing this, and they don't really understand. They're having enough trouble understanding how government works anyway.
Correct.
So to throw on words that are not, and I think this is the first time that people have talked about it and seem to understand what's going on ever when they've tried to do this.
Yeah. I mean, there is a following much more from what I heard through Columbia and Greg Kimsey now than there has been, or in at least the last two. So it'll be interesting to see how it kind of pans out, especially the community engagement. Because there's a large group of people in the community, well, not large, but I'd say regulars that attend our meetings, because we have open communication. People can share any of their concerns with us to the board, directions they'd like us to go, things to consider. And they'll continually come back and say, we need more people involved in the process. We need more people, you know, around the table. And I think it's just like you said, some people, I think, don't really know what's going on. And I think other people are just kind of like, do it and let us know what you come up with. But I do feel when it comes to our current, you know, state of affairs, people are engaged. People do know something's going on, at least from the feedback I've received just out in the community. So, I have no idea if that even made sense what I just said.
No, it doesn't make sense. I think you're correct.
So, any other, I mean, that's really all I have overall, just kind of quick synopsis of what we're doing. And if you have any questions or any other questions?
So, if you don't get it done by November, people can still vote on it in December?
And so, we have technically, like, as a freeholder, I'm technically elected until December of this year. And so, we have until December, and then it would be, depending on how long it takes to craft and finalize, it would probably, let's say, if we go through December, it would probably be on a special election in March. And so we're just holding, we're really trying not to. I believe it costs like $100,000+. And so we just really don't want to go
to a special election.
Yeah, not a special election. So the goal is this year's, well, actually, we have our freeholder meetings, our Saturday, this coming Saturday is our next one, and they're in the county building on the 6th floor. And then our next meeting after that, so every 2 weeks, we'll be moving out to Richfield for a meeting, and then Camas. So we're kind of going on a little tour so that we can hit up the different cities and people can come out and share their concerns or questions they might have. And then I do know once we have a charter crafted, we will do kind of a mini getting out and letting people know what we came up with. And once the charter is approved to go before the voters, then we're no longer freeholders. So by May, the goal is, I believe, like May 27th, then we would no longer be freeholders, and then basically the freeholders can choose to be out in the public supporting it, or there can be freeholders that are against it, you know, depending on the process. So the goal Nan has, actually Nan Hendrickson is our chair, we appointed her chair, and Joe Zarelli is vice chair, and Val Ogden is our secretary. And Nan's goal is, you know, one, to have as much agreement as possible, because again, that will go over much more in the community and for us when we're working together, hopefully to get it put through.
Thank you for your willingness to do this.
Well, thanks.
A lot of work. A lot of work. And so.
Well, thank you for having me.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Why did you run for a freeholder?
Oh, I in my day job, we're always collecting data, so people will hire us to, you know, find out anything in the community that we can bring back to our clients, whether it's local, you know, politicians or local elected leaders or nonprofits, businesses, whatnot. So I felt like, you know, I'm always collecting information for everybody else. Why not, you know, put it to good use for myself and really try to, you know, go into the board with a real open mind. You know, that's been my goal. And even at the first meeting, people were kind of going around like, well, you stand on this, and then, you know, and I said, I'm just going to have an open mind. I really want to hear from each other and really try to get something done. And I even heard this from the reporters, that this board has been an example of working together, listening to each other. And I mean, it's pretty divided. I mean, we've got a good group of Democrats and Republicans, and I think pretty much everybody claims to be one or the other. And they're really working together. And so that's kind of cool to see, and, you know, listening and hearing each other out. So that's been really exciting, really rewarding.
Well, that data is not just good for you, it's good for the community, though, too.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you.
I have a couple questions. How were the districts determined when they?
The five? Mm-hmm. I believe it's called the GIS, which is Dubuque County, and they basically, what we told them, because we had to keep it as apolitical as possible, we had to stay out of the process. So we told them that they could not divide a precinct. And so they would take it based on population and then based on the precinct borders. And that's basically how they came up with the numbers. And we were really impressed. We heard that it would take 3 months to get this back, and it was before our next meeting they were emailing it out to us. So that was...
Then the general versus the primary, where districts want, or right now lean, is to craft the charter so the districts would vote for just their own in the primary.
In the primary.
And then district or countywide in the general.
Yeah.
And right now, is it countywide both? Yeah.
No, right now it's just that way. Yeah. So district and then county. So that's not going to change. So, I do know at the last meeting we had a group of freeholders that would like us to discuss it one more time. So we are bringing it back about district-wide proposal. But I'm pretty sure the numbers are going to keep it district and county-wide.
I think you answered all
the
questions. When's Farmers Market open?
March 15th. March 15th. Yep. So it's coming up. People are waiting. A week away.
Not this weekend. This is getting crazy.
Well, thank you all. Appreciate it. And if you feel free, if you'd like an update, we can come back and let you know kind of the final product.
That would be great.
Thank you.
And maybe we could do, you could do a supported employment video for your band.
Vancouver side? We're always looking.
Trish will work with you on that.
There you go.
Well, let me say a couple things about the two people that aren't here. I've spoken many times with the City of Vancouver, and I sent this out to you because there are recommendations to change the disabled parking permits. One of the issues that came up was that I think it's like over half the parking in Seattle is free because people have a disabled parking permit, half the parking in downtown Seattle, which they don't feel is accurate. So that was kind of one of the drivers of this. And I think if you have comments about this, it's gone to a legislative bill, which I also emailed out to you. And the bill, I think, just supports the recommendations, which... probably have in your email then. If you don't, let me know and I'll email you.
Mary, when we got this the other day, I opened it up and I thought, okay.
The bill or the...
47 pages, I won't be able to read and then...
Oh, there's an executive summary.
I guess I didn't
get that far.
There is one in there, okay.
Yeah, it says 17 pages, but I don't think it is. Seems smaller than that to me, but you are more than welcome.
I've got it. You don't need to kill more trees, but can you give me an elevator?
Executive,
an elevator of what's...
Yes. I think that the group wanted a little more oversight on the medical community who is authorizing the permit.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a different kind of payment system.
This is one of the things that they raised that they felt was leading to the most abuse was not only did the disabled permit get you free parking, but unlimited time.
Unlimited time.
And they really felt that unlimited time was the biggest abuse piece because people are just trying to get those and then hang them and then leave their cars off.
They use it
in downtown Seattle.
And just go and leave it. And so they wanted to put some limit time on it.
So what about the person that works downtown that needs that all day for
Larry.
Work?
Larry. I think Dennis has something to say.
And I can just read the whole thing.
And they were going to make exceptions as far as the cost ones for people who maybe had disabilities that prevented them feeding a meter or people close enough to feed.
Okay.
put coins in.
Okay, so if they really truly have.
Yes, it talks about certain extensions. Yeah, almost like layered type.
Which would make sense.
Again, laying it kind of at the feet of some of the medical community to say whether it should be for 3 months or 12 months or, putting some limits around that.
Because I go to movies and I'm not sure what he's getting at. T R I V
Private.
C A N F I and find a place.
Well, some of the reason I know my mother had a permit that we used when I took her shopping, and there are lots of times when you can't find a place because somebody in kind of a large truck often jumps into their large truck if they're in the parking that's designated for disabled parking. So I think this is also trying to get rid of some of the abuses, or the people that really need it can have it and use it. In reality, with an aging population, it's going to be an increasing problem. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this may cause people to think a little more. I think it has the penalties if you inappropriately use it. Sandy Silvera was in the Vancouver pilot for disabled parking, and she used to issue citations, and it was pretty funny.
I guess I would lean that way, otherwise it ends up punishing those that don't abuse, potentially should just punish the ones that really do.
Which is what I don't think they want to punish anybody or take anything away from people who really need it. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is kind of take a step back and say, have we been so liberal that everybody has?
So, is this a state problem? Is this a national problem? Is this a Seattle problem? Is this a...
I think it could be anywhere, because I got one for my dad, and when he passed away, I still had it. I turned it back in, but there could be people that don't.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it was back in 5 years. They gave you a 5-year one. Well, then I could use it for 2 more years, and I did. I just turned it back in. But I think that's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've heard of people who had them from somebody else, and they never turn it back in, and they use it.
Mm-hmm. It's really tempting. I can totally understand. I can understand the temptation. I think it's an abuse.
I'm sure it's not as bad here as it is downtown Seattle, because the parking doesn't cost anywhere near, and the tickets in downtown Seattle. Well, let me put it this way: when John Lund comes here and gets a parking ticket, it's no more than what he would pay for parking in Seattle.
Right.
So he doesn't get excited at all if he has to pay a parking ticket here. He just...
So up there it's even more...
Yes.
It when you had, okay.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see in King County or Seattle when they raise their parking rates exponentially about 3 years ago. How applications were submitted and approved when that happened, because it was...
Yeah.
Well, I tried to get one, it's been quite a few years ago, when I had a major back procedure, and it was going to be 3 months that and I said, I'm just curious, can I get one on a temporary basis, the process became so cumbersome that I just quit. I just gave up. So I always thought they were just really difficult to get.
I took it to the doctor and he
said, I got it right away. I guess I went about it the wrong way. I went by the paperwork myself the new way, I guess.
Somehow you missed the boat on that. Then my mother figured out how to get one when she actually needed it.
Yeah.
Well,
Well, there's probably a way to deal with the time situation, the time situation by denoting what, how long somebody actually will need it for.
Oh.
I mean, if somebody is going to work, I think you can have a case of 9 hours. If somebody is going to stop work, I mean, it's
it's just they have those in place now for regular parking. I have a G-zone parking, which gives me a certain amount of time downtown Portland in certain areas. And they do it. So anyway, okay, sorry we went off on
that. No, that's okay.
With chips, they'll have this all down pretty soon. Okay. We'll get a chip or something.
Oh, chip.
Yeah. You're trying to scan your forehead. From,
okay. So, next we have Jessica here from Vancouver Mental Health Outreach. Hi.
Hi, my name is Jesse Lieri. I'm an AmeriCorps VESTA serving at the Dream Community Services Northwest Vancouver Mental Health Program. The mental health program is fairly new. Has been accepting clients starting last October. We had a ribbon cutting. We only accept recipients of Medicaid, including the new Medicaid, and we can also sign people up for ACA as well. And I just brought some postcards.
Did you see that woman in the white shirt gets one?
Yes.
Or a couple?
Yeah, I can start them off at the...
I think she's in a Seahawks shirt. Not a white shirt.
Yeah, not a white shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, she can take it to the Development and Abilities case managers.
Okay, great. So we're a new program, and we our client base we serve are those who are Medicaid recipients. And so my job as outreach specialist is just to go around and make people aware of the program since it's so new. So we have one full-time counselor and two part-time counselors. Two of the part-time counselors speak a couple different languages. Unfortunately, none of them speak Spanish yet. Some of our community partners are NAMI and YWCA. And I'm actually going to be involved with a StoryCorps project with NAMI, which will be part of a community forum that will happen in May during Mental Health Awareness Month. So if you have any questions about the program, please let me know. Feel free to email me, and I can get back to you about them.
And you take Medicaid, right?
Yes, Medicaid. That's the only clients that we serve are Medicaid.
Does it say that on the
thing? It doesn't, but it will.
Is your email on the website, or?
My email can be found on the website. The phone number at the bottom is actually our head counselor's phone number and extension. And her name is Heather, and that's who clients would contact to make appointments, but they could also call the main line to make an appointment, or email me, or call me. We're currently accepting new clients. One of the things that I think is really great about our mental health program is the counselors can come and meet with the clients in their home, at a coffee shop. It doesn't have to be at our office, which is a nice thing about being so small, is that we're really client-oriented. So it's really, we can meet wherever the client feels most comfortable in meeting.
Do you have the ability to communicate with people with hearing loss?
You know, that's a good question. I think we do, but let me double-check because I don't want to... I don't want to give you the wrong answer. And we do have people on staff who can prescribe medications, so we have varying levels. They're accepting all different levels, and I can't remember the right terminology, so forgive me. I just got done with a project review. But let me get back to you. Let me double check so I can make sure I give you accurate information. And we may be doing some work with the Housing First program, assuming that all the funding goes through and it does actually happen. And I can give you more information on that as well. And are there any other questions?
Who did you say your community partners were besides
NAMI? YWCA on occasion gives us referrals. And then also we work with the different mental health programs. You know, sometimes they get booked up and they'll refer a client to us, and that's actually a requirement. Like Community Services Northwest, Columbia River Mental Health, CMAR, a lot of our refugees go to CMAR for their health checkups. LCSNW was formed in 1994 and in Vancouver and primarily served immigrants, refugees, and the poor, and has expanded to have a crime victim advocacy program, which assists victims of crime, and a citizenship program, an elder abuse prevention program, immigration program, and then the newly formed mental health program. So Lutheran Community Services is involved in the community in many aspects, and has actually been around longer than 1994, but officially became a social services program in 1994.
Here.
In Vancouver.
It's older in Florida.
Mm-hmm. It's actually regional. We have sites in throughout Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Some of the programs have programs specifically for veterans. Some focus with foster youth or at-risk youth. And so it just kind of, it depends on what the community need is and versus what LCSNW is at capacity to provide. And the mental health program is actually has been in the works for about 3 to 4 years, and so we were really excited to actually get it going. Let me know if there are any other questions about LCSNW or the mental health program, or about what I do.
I have a question.
Yes.
Are you responsible for outreach about this program? Is that what you're doing?
Yes, I'm the outreach specialist, and I'm actually I'm in my third and final years at AmeriCorps Vista. I actually started LCSNW as the refugee orientation specialist, and so I developed a life skills workshop program for refugees, and that was a really interesting and great experience. And then I kind of moved on, and so now I'm in my final years doing outreach for the mental health program. And I actually... I sit on the Community Action Advisory Board. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but they hold the community block grant. And so we divvy money to organizations like United Way or SHARE or Council for the Homeless. I mean, programs that are working at alleviating people out of poverty, which is kind of the core mission statement for VISTA. And then I... involved in the neighborhood association where LCSNW sits on, and then I help out with various different projects like the Healthy Neighborhoods Coalition, the faith-based network, coffee network group, and a couple other things. So my role is not limited to outreach, but outreach for the mental health program is my name purpose.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
If I can ask something of our board, it dawned on me when Jessica came in that people may or may not be aware that we record all these meetings. And so I don't know if it would be helpful at the beginning of our meeting to maybe just remind everybody.
She did.
You?
Yes.
And then,
I just
thought of it for Jessica. Sorry.
Maybe we should.
Oh, that's right. You talked about the minutes.
Yeah.
We will see about a sign so that when people aren't here when it's announced. Mm-hmm. They will.
They slip in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you would change too many things, Jessica, but it just dawned on me that if you wanted to say something candid, you would be recorded at this point.
Believe me, it's changed all of our conversations.
I'm actually, because I do so much outreach, I've just, I really try to be careful as to what I say. Mm-hmm. And because I sit on the Community Action Advisory Board, they've actually been pushing me to mentioning it every time I go to a meeting because I always forget to mention it. So I'm not worried about it. But that is a good, that it would be good to have a sign out there.
Thank you. Darla doesn't mind being recorded. I don't. I really appreciate the reminder that I am being recorded.
I need the reminder.
You just didn't hear it.
Free recording, but I might have handled Jim's so little question and answer thing.
So we are wrapping up session. We are supposed to be ending next week on the 13th. Last rumor I heard is that we will be ending 2 days early. So we will see how that goes. I know. I will believe it when I see it, but that's what I've been told. So on the sheet that you are being handed out, on one side is the side-by-side of the budgets comparisons, and that's where we're at right now is budget negotiations. And then on the other side is the bills that are still alive as of who's Monday. What are we on? Wednesday. So we have cut off last night. So anyway, so let's look at the budget first. As you can see, there was some happy faces and smiley faces. We like the Senate budget a little bit better than the House budget. And they are working on those negotiations right now. We anticipated going into this session that it was going to be a quick supplemental budget without a lot of issues happening for individuals with developmental disabilities. And that has not been the case. It has been a very exciting, popping, fast legislative session with lots of bills introduced and some very exciting stuff happening for families and individuals with developmental disabilities. So one of the things that you will see in the governor's, well, no, the governor didn't fund it, but, well, he did up above. So one of the things that we're really working on is to create a community first choice option. And what that is a state option through our Developmental Disabilities Administration for them to be able to provide services through this option. What it will do is allow us to partner with the federal government on our Medicaid personal care dollars and be able to pull down an additional 6 cents on each dollar, well, each 50 cents. Right now it's 50-50, so we'll get 56 cents instead of 50 cents from the federal government. So we will get additional dollars on the money that we're already spending. Our hope with this is that we'll be able to then serve additional individuals that are on the waiting list.
For respite
and Medicaid personal care. There's actually going to be a work group that's being created. I was actually asked today to be on that work group that will decide exactly what all will be included in that community first choice option. And what we're going to do then is they're taking the individual and family services that we currently receive, putting those into a waiver that will allow us to serve an additional 4,000 individuals. And then with some of that funding that's left, we can then hire enough FTEs through the Division of Developmental Disabilities Administration and to implement the CFO and be able to implement another 1,000 individuals getting on. So we're looking at creating much more capacity within our system without spending another dime. So we're very excited about that. There's several different bills that address this, and it really is interesting how those are being played out right now up in Olympia. And as long as one of them goes through that gets the job done, I don't care which form it is. But if you flip over, you will see we have Substitute Senate Bill 6387 that passed the Senate. Senator Hill
had put that one forward. It's an excellent bill. They put an amendment on, I can't remember, I think it was Becker put it, no, I can't remember who put the amendment on it. Somebody put an amendment on it in the House and took out a lot of what we wanted and just put in intent language. Well, intent language is great, but you can't necessarily hold it as accountable as you can some of the other things. So we'll see how that goes. There's also the, so it's Senate Bill 6387, and then it is House Bill. Let me see, where's that one at? Yeah, it is. It's 20. And I'm not seeing it. It's on here. Oh, there it is, 2746, which is Representative Green. And so with Representative Green's bill, she actually forgot to put in, or it was slipped, to put in the individual and family services into a waiver. So they actually, because the title of the bill was too small, they couldn't add it into that bill, so they added it into another bill. So if they do the House version, it's going to take a couple bills getting through to get the same thing accomplished as if we can get the Senate version through. So, I'm told, regardless how it goes through, it'll be good. We're very excited, and we're going to get people served, and that's what matters in the long run. We are working on a training exemption bill for our in-home community care workers. Right now, if someone works for the union as an independent provider, they have to have 75 hours of training. Families are having a hard time accessing respite providers because if a college student comes home for the summer or holiday break or something, they don't necessarily have the time or the desire to do 75 hours worth of training to provide 30 hours worth of respite. So currently there's in statute a exemption that will expire in June that says if they do less than 20 hours a month, they do not have to do that 75 hours of training. What we're trying to replace it with is so that it would be 300 hours a year, which is a little more than the 20 hours a month. That way, if someone's home for the summer and they're only doing care during the summer, they're not held to that 75 hours of training. So, and we actually have been working because we were concerned that the union might push back against it. So at the table and having these discussions, we've had the governor's office and the union members and the DDC and the state ARC and the parents from around the state. So we're hopeful that that got pulled last night out of rules and we're going forward. Questions?
So this move to create the new waiver, is that something that was prompted by a change in the federal waiver standard that it's a brand new option, or is it just that the legislature is now so motivated to serve more people, they're being as creative as possible?
Well, the community first choice option is a new option. Okay. That is not a waiver in and of itself. We're combining that with an individual and family support waiver.
Okay.
And the combination together will be able to go forward. Oregon actually has already put forth a community first choice option. Mm-hmm. And we're learning some lessons by how Oregon has implemented it and how we we'll go forward and probably be a little more intentional on which services we put in that option. But there has been a lot of work done in the last two or three years around our non-paid services caseload and really looking at, we have become a state of the haves and the have-nots, and that's not good public policy, and we need to figure out how do we serve those who look exactly like the ones who have service but are not receiving anything.
Or and so, put no limit. Budgetary or any kind of limits around it. So case managers are writing plans for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 and they have to do it. And
yeah,
they put no limit on the bill. And so at some point when the Oregon legislature meets, they're going to have to figure out that they kind of got to run away.
Yeah, but for the individual.
Well, for the individual, it might be great.
No, but for the individuals who have already been assessed as needing that service, they will be entitled to it.
Yeah.
So it will,
yeah,
then only be able to make changes going forward.
Right.
That, you know.
But even so, they're
going to have to.
It will be interesting if they don't do something, because it'll get.
Yeah. So the Senate bill going forward had a 3% cap on it that It's 3% per capita cost limit for the first year and clarifies that caseload growth, case mix, inflation, vendor rate, or collective bargaining changes are not included in the 3%. But when they put the amendment on it in the House, it took that 3% off. So that's one of the pieces we're going to have to watch really close. Because if we don't have those caps on it, we could have, like you said, it would be excellent for the individuals, but could our state budget balance it going forward? And we need it to all balance out so that we have everyone served.
And I could talk about it all day, but I won't.
Well, it sounds like it'll be on Tuesday, right?
Let's hope so. Tuesday and Thursday, one way or the other, we hope.
Well, the homeless programs are also kind of being held hostage for those of you who have been reading the paper about or getting an email that the funding tied to some real estate tax things that currently go to fund most of the homeless and there's a big fight in the Senate and the House about that.
There is. There's some, they're being political. And so with DD, we're trying to stay out of all of that and just really focus on this zero cost balance way where we can move forward and serve more individuals. We want to stay nonpartisan. So, any questions?
Thank you, Dr.
It's a good year. We're excited.
A couple of pieces of information. It looks as if the Columbia River Crossing Light Rail project that was in the Oregon House didn't get to the Senate and wasn't signed by the governor, Kitzhaber. So it looks as if, and from what I've heard, that the CRC project is dead. And so at this point in time, that's something we can put behind us. However, on the bright side, I saw a transmission yesterday that the Federal Transit Administration approved $39 million for bus rapid transit along the 4th Plain Corridor. That still has to be approved by the C-Tran Board of Directors, and that'll be on March 18th. If they decide to go with the bus rapid transit program, then we're probably looking at BRT around 2016. And so there will be service that will go from Vancouver Mall down Fort Plain Boulevard, down Fort Vancouver Way, and then terminating downtown. I'm not sure exactly where. There's going to be changes this coming fall in the number 19 and number 9 routes that serve the Sand Creek Philida area. One of the biggest changes is proposals that the route that goes, I think it's on 10th, it's the far western edge of the number 9 route. No, 19. I always get to 19.
19 route. 10, but that's on that side of the
road. Right. That may be discontinued and there'd be more frequency on the route that goes down Taney Road and then up 119. So those are the fixed route situations. Right now, I'm working in the preliminary stages of a concept called community van pool. Community van pool is an idea that quite a few of us had for years, saying that what if the community had access to an accessible vehicle that would be able to transport folks that maybe live outside of the C-Van service area or want to be transported other than the hours that C-VAN operates, which is nearest the fixed route system. It would be in Clark County. And one of the key components of it would be is it'd be using volunteers to drive this vehicle. And so the the basics of the project right now is discussion about purchasing a Eldorado bus, which is similar to what you see C-Vans, provide training, do vetting and background checks of volunteers, and then have volunteer groups working with us in requesting time to use the bus. I can't go into a lot of details because we're in the very preliminary phases of this. I can see certain groups being very excited about it, one of which is Special Olympics, another one being the Art in Clark County, and also other groups like some of the group homes, some of the institutions, some of the groups like Parks and Recreation. It allows a greater degree of flexibility for transportation for people that use mobility devices and have that need. But it also says that this is a community problem. We want a community solution. So I'll be coming back to you asking for volunteers to sit down with me and voice their opinions, what their expectations are. I've been talking to people right now. I'm in the really fun stuff for me, which is creating budgets and all that kind of stuff. I hate that so much. I wish I could give you more information. I think there's a strong possibility that this concept could be something we could have in Clark County. We're looking at a demonstration project as a way to kick it off. There are some funds available to do portions of this, but again, it's a community involvement process. So while CTRAN can contribute some funds would have to come from maybe through in-kind donations, like volunteer drivers, those kinds of things, coordination, outreach, those kinds of things from other groups. They do this in other parts of the state. Intercity Transit in Olympia has 8 vehicles. They don't have Eldorado-sized buses. They have the Econoline 15-passenger vehicles. Seattle Metro does have Eldorado-type buses. Spokane, Ben Franklin Transit in the Tri-Cities area. So it's not something that's, you know, unique to Clark County, but it could give us a little bit more choice. And I think that's what we're looking at.
How many passengers are the ones that you're looking at?
The buses we're looking at could hold either 5 mobility devices with probably about 4 ambulatory folks, or upwards to about 12 ambulatory folks. And they actually have the capacity to go a little bit further, but to avoid requiring CDL licensing, we have to limit the number of passengers.
So these work in these other places?
Yes. Yes, they're very effective.
That can really help them moving this forward.
Right. I mean, that's why we've been talking about this. I've been kind of talking about this a lot for the last 3 years, and I think that the other transits have done this has kind of made my administration maybe a little bit more adventurous, a little bit less fearful that they're getting into something that they don't want to get into. There's some pitfalls, and it's far from being a done deal. Kind of hesitating a little bit, but I think it's something that could offer a lot more choice for folks.
Wasn't there just someone on the news about private taxis? They just got kind of nailed it there. That's the other way to have more choice.
Well, you know, all taxi services have to have some degree of accessible vehicles.
Yeah.
The problem we found with private for profit is that sometimes their cost drop charge, for example, for an accessible wheelchair to transport a person in a mobility device, drop charge maybe $25, $30 plus $250, $3 a mile. That can rack up to a $60 bill real quick. And that's going one way. So it's a challenge, but I think we have an opportunity.
Yes. Thank you.
Was that thanks? I was short and sweet. Or?
I know. In new business, I just have a couple of things.
the first one is that the training series, the Informing Families and Educators Training Transition Series, on April 2nd, which is when the next board workshop is, they have a national speaker on the topic of building a whole life for the whole family, Catherine Carroll. So do we as a board want to have a workshop on April 2nd, or would we want to not have one that night so people could attend that training?
How many of us would be attending?
I would want to go see a national speaker.
Okay.
I think we could get to work, so.
Yeah.
And I will send you out. Well, here it is. I don't need to send this. All right. If you have any questions, you call me.
Looks like their last one in May is on housing, and Dell isn't here tonight, but
yeah, he was really good. I'll send this electronically also, so that since Dell might be interested.
Mary, we didn't get it on the agenda, but new business might be, the board might want to talk about the October event.
Oh,
getting going with.
You want to get started on
planning for that.
And do you want Jim Corey to help you again?
Yes. Please.
If you want that. Okay, I'll get in touch with Jim. And do we know who's interested in being on the committee, or are you all want to think about that?
Okay. I'll do that again.
I'd serve again.
Oh yeah, I would too.
Okay.
Go for it.
2, 4, 5.
All we get to do is tell Jim what to do.
Okay.
And I'm interested in going to that one on May 2nd.
That was the other thing I was going to say.
Okay. That there's a transition conference on May 2nd at Hester Chilton. So it's right here in our backyard. So you're interested in going? I'm interested in going. You received information about that conference?
Probably not.
It looks like it has a lot of information.
If we,
okay, you sent it out to us just this afternoon.
Was it? No.
Yesterday.
Did I send it out?
Barry sent it out.
Oh, okay.
It's a school day for me, so.
Okay, but if you are interested, I will cover the cost of the board if you would let me know.
Okay.
So that I could put it all in one purchase order would be really Hilton.
Yeah.
People are staying at the Red Hat.
Oh,
Black. Yeah. The Hilton kind of spending for them. So, who's sending that?
Maybe the school day?
It's a Friday.
Yeah. You sent the email out. Yeah.
Wow. I thought that was a bad day, but
do you want to go?
Fourth.
Okay.
I want to go.
When do you need to know by here? I mean, I would go. I'm missing a lot of work right now. Daddy's having surgery on Friday. There's a lot.
Get you up.
Yeah.
Anybody else? I have three for that. Okay. And I'll see if Joe wants to do it. He's already kind of gone through that. So
any other new business?
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't do this earlier. On April 5th is the All Born In Conference, which is cross disability. It's going to be held at the Red Lion at Jansen Beach. That's an excellent conference for all individuals to attend. They really have stuff for all ages. And then on, I got my notes mixed up with my things I wanted to share. Also, I just wanted to say that on October the 15th is going to be our candidates forum this year. So if we
October?
Can.
October?
Right. October the 15th.
The what?
Candidates forum.
Coming up on the November election.
Cannabis.